a Motorsport Podcast Network production. Well, it's time for our race control episode of the V8 Sleuth podcast in the wake of a big weekend in New Zealand in Taupo. Got to get it right. I've got a bloke who is from New Zealand. He can guarantee me if I'm going to get a drive-through for that description. Craig Baird, the driving standards advisor for the Repco Supercars Championship. How's my pronunciation? Am I okay there? Am I good to go, or am I coming to pit lane for that pronunciation?
No, you're actually very good to go, but it's hard for me because I actually come back from growing up there and I always said Taupo. Now it's Taupo. So it's actually awkward for me to say it. So I try and beat around the bush and don't get the word out. And the weird part was I heard the mayor of Taupo talking and he said Taupo. So maybe it was the stress of TV.
There was a little bit of confusion out of the weekend, but one of the things we weren't confused about was that Saturday there was plenty of action. We've got a lot to cover off in this episode. But firstly, before we get into on-track stuff and penalties and pit lane and some of the stuff that was going on, give me a take on how special it was as a Kiwi to have your nation back in the championship with the supercars back in New Zealand. You're on the ground. It looked like it was an amazing event that was well attended with passionate fans and it all went well. What was your take from before we get into the race control stuff?
Well, I'm pleased you actually started there because the race control stuff always takes away from sometimes what is an amazing event. What Tony Kuhn and Supercars put on and Tony's team was just outstanding. I arrived there on the Friday. There was people everywhere. There's cars queuing to get into car parks. It just had a old school motor racing feel about it. The banks were full. Sadly, we had a very wet Saturday, but people stayed. They had their red band gumboots on. They had their raincoats, and it was, I know we all use this word too much, but it's fantastic. It was an amazing event, and everyone that was involved should be extremely proud.
I've said this in the last couple of weeks and been saying it for a while, that we have to find a way to have two rounds in New Zealand. I remember those great days of the Wellington and Pukki races back to back, as you know, you competed in those back in the day in different categories. Where else could we go? I mean, you're the Kiwi expert here on the Aussie. I'm clueless. We clearly need distance between the tracks physically. Do we have to go to the South Island for another weekend of racing?
Look, you'd say Hampton Downs is probably the right track and the right facility, because don't forget, you've got to have infrastructure. You've got to be able to garage cars. You've got to be able to have people viewing. You've got to have grandstands. You've got to have accommodation, everything else. So the logical thing would be Hampton Downs, but as you said, they're probably too close together. Now, Highlands in Cromwell, which is another Tony Kuhn, well, they're both Tony Kuhn, own circuits. That's doable. That's very doable, but there's a lot of logistical things, freight, moving the cars around. You've got a ferry to get between the two islands. So there's a lot more involved. But certainly Highlands is capable of hosting a supercars round.
Love to see it. I've not been there yet, but I've seen plenty of vision of those 101 GT races that were there some years ago. It looks like a pretty great driver's track. Let's get into the weekend, though, from Taupo. We had a lot to talk about on Saturday and not as much to talk about Sunday, and unsurprisingly, because of the weather, that really brought a lot of that into play. So start line incident. Saturday, Cam Waters on the pole, slow start. Tim Slade makes a great start, trying to find some room. He goes to a gap that was there when he went for it, that was gone by the time he got to it. Racing incident, it sort of looked to me like that was a classic case of not one particular person's fault there.
Yeah, look, it was sad because a lot of people tried to blame Sladey for it. Sladey got a great start and the gap was there. What you got to remember as a race driver, you're trying to shut one car down, oblivious of what's on the other side. So Brown, yes, moved to centre, but Cam also moved to centre. So that gap should never have completely vanished. So they both had a little bit of blood on their hands. It always looks like it's the one marching through the middle is at fault. But sometimes you just you got to break it down, look at all the movement and go, is there any one guy wholly or predominantly to blame for that incident? And my recommendation to the stewards was 3-1 doesn't go. They all had a little bit of accountability, but you know, then some people said to me, oh, you know, Slater was nearly part, or he was past Cam when he hit his door and everything, but he's not realizing what Will's trying to do. He doesn't realize that Will's coming across. So you're kind of blind as a driver sometimes. And I'll sum it up by saying everyone on the grid would have done exactly the same as what Slater did. There was a big hole. He went for it. It diminished from both sides. That was the end.
I was really interested, Beto, on the roll into the weekend. Having not been to Taupo before, but having a look on camera, the start line to the first corner, it's a really short run. There's not much time there to sort things out. And I kind of felt like that weekend would go with no problems into turn one because there's not much time for it to unfold. But what we saw was there was such a mad dash to get across to cover the inside line or pick a lane either way that people were making their decision very, very early, and we actually got the opposite where there was some drama.
Yeah, and there's two components to this. A lot of people sort of whinged that, oh, Beto should have made it a safety car restart. Well, that just wasn't on because that would have just made everything so much faster to turn one. And the other part of that is it's a bit like Bathurst. You got all the corporate right above. It's a show. We've got 24 of the best drivers, and I say this, in the world. They can go and compete anywhere in the world. And what I thought, we can't rob the fans, the corporates, the spectators, Tony Quinn, his team, of those 24 cars sitting on a start line with the limiter. Safety is always my priority. So you may ask, then, why did I do that? Really simple. Because it's such a short run to turn one, I thought they'd all get in there in such a low speed compared with a safety car restart. So what actually triggered the whole thing was there's been a new surface put in from just after the start line through turn one. So the guys on the one surface gets a much better start than the guys on the front row that only had a very short time on one surface before they transferred to the next surface and lost traction. So it was a difficult situation, but I think we made the right decision. And again, I read some of the comments on V8 Sleuth, et cetera. Half are there, so you've made the right decision. If everyone was saying one thing, as I've said in the past, you know, I'll probably take a good look at myself and think maybe I got it wrong. And I've never been scared of admitting I get it wrong.
No, we've seen that before. Absolutely. That's not just talk. We've seen you make apologies with blues and errors that you felt were wrong later on. So that's definitely not lip service. A couple of meters down the road, turn one, first race Saturday in Taupo. So Brock Feeney ends up off the road. I mean, his day never really recovered. He just struggled on Saturday. Thomas Randall got into him and Thomas was penalised. But we also did see Matt Payne off the road. It was a bit of a multi-car touch, and he was kind of the end of the touches and ended up off the road. Was there any look at something going on there with a penalty for why he ended up off the road, or was that a case of everyone had a bit of equity there and no one person again was to blame?
100%, because Payne was three wide. The car next to him, I think from memory, was a DJR car, and then there was a car on the inside of him. Payne was trying to come in a little bit, not blaming him. You got to get in there at some stage, but when you're three wide and the 1 second in the queue can't move to the left and they make contact, sometimes it spins a car. But you have 3-1 and it just doesn't go. The guy on the outside generally will lose.
And we saw that was the case too when it came time to have pit stops. There was a bit of a calamity there. Let's break that one down a little bit. So one of the discussion points, so we saw cars coming here, there and everywhere, double stacking, people parked, people trying to get into bays, people trying to get out of bays. There was stuff going on everywhere. Before we delve into the who, what, when, where, there and why there was no specific penalty to any one particular car driver or team, I wanted to get your take on, we've got this live pit lane where the order of where the teams are lined up in the pit lane is the team's championship points from the previous round. First time we've ever done it. We've always been team's championship results from the previous year. You've got your neighbours for the year. But I guess that's got to have a bit of equity in weird stuff like this unfolding too, because when you've got a different neighbour every weekend, it's kind of like, you know, do you know the neighbours? Do you not know the neighbours? Do they talk your language? Do they know where you're putting your bin out of a night time and all that sort of stuff? I think we saw a little bit of that unfold in what unfolded on the Saturday. Is that a fair take?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. I was never a fan of it, and I did say that to Supercars. Having a different neighbour week in, week out is really difficult. And we've had dramas in the past with 888 and DJR, but they worked around who the problem was or where the problem was and allowed each other through bays and did different things and worked together. And it's not like you can run up there and talk to them. A nod of the head or a thumbs up or just having that working relationship goes a long way to making the pit lane kind of work. This pit lane was difficult. It's probably one of the best pit lanes we could have gone to ever because it's so wide. But we had a problem when you come into the D restriction at the 40, you couldn't have the first bays coming straight in. They had to come around a cone because otherwise their travel distance would have been 30, 40 metres less. They'd only have to come out of their working bay to the fast lane, not come from the fast lane back in. So if you understand what I'm saying, you've all got to travel the same distance. So we put Dunlop at the end. They used the first four garages as working bays. Then you had the other end of town couldn't use the last four bays because the angle moving back to the fast lane would have been way too sharp. They would have had to turn from their bay and just go basically 90 left. So that's not fair on them. So we lost eight garages. So that compressed them in the middle. And that was probably the awkward bit. So then you have a safety car come out. Everyone was trying to race there, double stack. There was a small move. I won't name names, and I'll go through why we didn't penalise. One car moved slightly forward, which then didn't allow one of the Penrite cars to come in. Then that car was stuck at a 45. They had a teammate come in and park on his bumper, so that car was at 45, and then that blocked the pit lane completely of people coming basically in or out. So we spent hours going through it, and we thought, look, there's too many cars that actually had small breaches in that pit lane. So we're probably best just to bring the team's reps in, sit them down and just have a discussion with them, because each one of them thought everyone else should have got a penalty until you explain, well, what about this? I can give penalties or recommend penalties to the stewards for all of these breaches, but let's not make that the headline act of Taupo. Let's sit there and make it better. So what we did, we actually put a bulletin out through Supercars. We all put our heads together. So what we're going to do in the future in those situations, we don't need double stacking. It just doesn't work in many of our pit lanes. So what we're trying to do, or what we're going to do, is we will go safety car. Everyone will go to their 80 kilometres an hour. No more racing back to the pit lane. From that point, the race director will leave the safety car basically it's a full course yellow, at the 80 kilometres an hour for at least two laps. So the first car can pit, leave, carries on doing 80 kilometres an hour. The next car can come in, it leaves. Once the pit cycle's through, then we can compress the field and go racing again when the incidents cleaned up. So I think that's a big move going forward. And everyone thinks, oh, well, it's just easy. It should have been done years ago. But the tools to make that happen, you're basically going to an F1 level where everyone has to reach a speed in a certain time, get to that limiter. People always think someone else won a little bit or I lost, or, you know, there's always contention around it. But the MoTeC system in the dash allows the countdown. That's your time when you have to be doing 80 kilometres an hour. We'll guarantee from race control we won't just compress the field until the pit cycle's through. It may happen when there's no pit cycle. If no one's pitting, then we can compress the field earlier. But it's technology and it's safety. And in this part of the world, you can't come into the back pit lane backwards or bulldoze cars out of the road to get to your pit bay. And as a driver, you're so desperate to either come in or get out. Safety's irrelevant. When I talk to a lot of the mechanics in the pit lane, they'll tell you we're scared to be in the pit lane. So we can't have them like that, and we've just got to make it better.
Will that be something, Craig, that will be in for Perth? Like, will we see that? Because that's a good track for it, isn't it? Because of the tight nature of it and the short lap.
Yeah, we had it implemented, as I said, to all the teams for the Sunday race, that's what we would do to avoid double stacking. Then you have problems, though. You go to a large track like Bathurst, you lose a lot of time because everyone's doing the 80 Ks for two laps around Bathurst. You're talking, it's probably 7 or 8 minutes. And then you've still got to compress the field after that. So people will always complain that we're using up time or whatever, but we've got to work through that. Bathurst is a little bit different. Generally, cars are able to double stack because of, A, the length of the pit lane, and it's nothing to do with the width. It's just really the length of where they can position themselves to let someone behind them and the car, which is generally the boom behind, out. Mm. So, look, everything looks easy, but there's pros and cons for everything, and we'll work our way through it and hopefully make it better.
Yeah, and getting rid of that double stack situation from a safety perspective in the pit lane for the crew members, the mechanics who are working on the cars or are ready for their cars coming in, or, you know, farewelling a car as it departs. That's the big part here.
Yeah, and I suppose the other part of that is people have always said, oh, it's easy, you just shut pit lane. But when you shut pit lane, you generally box people on doing another strategy or trying something different. And supercars want to leave that open. They're trying to get sort of more open book policy of trying to do your own strategies, not boxing everyone to the same thing. So if you shut pit lane, everyone has to do the same thing. So strategy goes completely out the window at a race like Bathurst especially.
I thoroughly enjoyed too that the term fuel drop wasn't used on the weekend because it wasn't part of the weekend, and it didn't change the game at all. It just opened it up for people to have a different way. And it probably got the television away from being obsessed with how much fuel had to go in each car at the remaining last stop for the run home. So that was a big tick at my end. Saturday, we saw a couple of other things relating to teams championship points and a fine. So we'll go with the Will Brown scenario from Red Bull Ampol Racing. So there was a teams championship point penalty and a $1,500 fine. It was 30 teams champ points. A wheel nut from the Will Brown car pit stop rolled into the fast lane. And I've seen a lot of fans jumping up and down online, as they do when Red Bull have this situation, because there's plenty of people who love the team because they've got lots of fans, but there's a lot of people who are against them because they have a lot of people who are against them. And this is not one of those scenarios. This is in the rule book in terms of this being a team penalty, because it's not the driver who has done this. And this is, I mean, any race fan can look back through the penalties over recent years to see that these scenarios are penalised this way. Many years ago, they weren't. I mean, there were penalties handed out that were affecting drivers with drive-throughs and things like that. But this is not a new thing. This is not a new thing, though, is it?
That was always the penalty for a wheel coming off, or, you know, plus a team's fine, a wheel nut, drive-through penalties. And over the years, they've evolved that recommended penalties thing. And I'm not handballing here, but that's we get a technical report from the team. They investigate with the team why a wheel nut goes across pit lane or why a wheel falls off. So they do all the back of house work and then come to us with a, they have a recommended penalties table. And I think it's really good. It certainly wasn't Chaz's fault, and it certainly wasn't Will's fault. So it's finger trouble with mechanics and teams. So penalise them, not the driver. And I think that's been a huge move in the last couple of years to get it away from the driver being accountable for something that he is not in control of.
I understand that that's a technical recommendation from the tech team at Supercars rather than up in race control. But I think the fans probably would want to understand, and maybe this is an ongoing discussion, that the same penalties given for a wheel nut rolling, you know, a metre into the pit lane versus a wheel that, you know, who knows where it could go. Thankfully, it didn't go anywhere bad or hurt anybody in that scenario. But is there more, and I know that we've talked about this on this pod many times, you've got your sheet, you've got your list of what you can give for various incidents. Is that the same for the technical guys? Is there more scope to give different penalties for things that, well, that could have been a lot worse and we would have, you know, or where are they? Are they in a similar situation?
Yeah, and I agree. Like, spinning a wheel nut out of a wheel at the pit stop is not really dangerous as such. Having a wheel fall off a car, so to me they're two totally different things. But the scope of how many penalties that you've got to have a recommended for and what you've done in the past, they've also got to go back through the notes too and go, what, a wheel fell off Bathurst, what was the penalty? So it's a tough one because you can't realistically write a penalty for everything that ever happens that at a motor racing meeting. And if you think you can, give us your number because yeah, it's, you know, there's just so many variables, mechanical failures and stuff. So, but as I say, yeah, those two penalties, I believe they ended up the same. Probably should be different penalties. And people probably look at that and go, God, that didn't actually stack up. But when you're writing rules and penalties, you probably go, the wheel nut falls off, whether it's in the pit lane or on the track, it's the wheel nut falling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, totally.
I think that could be better.
It's hard to make a list of every possible outcome with 24 race cars and infinite number of parts. And you're right, we'd be writing rules until the day that we draw our last breath. So that's just a case of what it is. But Saturday was busy. Sunday, from my knowledge and what I recall, was a lot quieter. Probably the only thing that spun into my mind was a bit of NASCAR spec. There was a bit of payback late on Sunday. Richie Stanaway and Brody Kostecki giving one another a bump and a bit of a rub and a whack, and they each got – it was kind of one of those ones, well, he hit me, yeah, so you hit him, and they both got hit in the end.
Yeah, well, the funny part was I saw Kostecki get in the back of Stanaway and – Stanaway lost two positions to that. So I thought, it was a 5-second penalty. But something didn't sit well because that's not really Brody to just move someone out of the way. So I issued that penalty. It was a clear breach. He got in the back of him, pushed him off, not off the track, pushed him offline onto the marbles. So you think, maybe I'll just go back a bit further. So Carl that works with me, I got him. I said, just go and see. Something happened, I reckon, further back. So we did go back and we found it at turn four. Richie has a decent dive bomb and comes across the grass, and actually Brody being Brody got tagged, but actually was probably one of the few on the planet that would have saved it. He was on the rack stops for about 50 metres. And then I thought, damn, they're both breaches, but I've got them round the wrong way. One happened before the other. And look, I'm the first guy to say I would love to have just said that's a play on effect. But then we go there, then we move to the next event. Those paybacks become bigger, and someone punches someone in the face, and you punch them back, and it just gets bigger. And I've said it before, I love watching NASCAR. But I still can't get my head around you can come to the line at Talladega and block from there to there and take half the field out and it's all sweet. So we are what we are. We've got a more European spec. You race hard, rub, do that, but no payback stuff.
Yeah, yep, for sure. Otherwise it'll go forever and it'll get messy and nasty.
Well, it just magnifies. Yeah, correct. It just keeps magnifying.
Yep.
And the little bump and runs, which I love, but it's not in our playbook and I don't write the playbook, but I've been there.
Mm.
20 years ago, 30 years ago, you just kept upping them until they're out of control, and then the teams would have to get involved and go, hey, we've got to stop. Can we draw a line in the sand here and just hang the white flag out for both drivers?
Yeah. It gets expensive and dangerous, that's for sure. Was there anything else out of Sunday of note, mate? It was a pretty quiet one. Once the weather was a bit clearer, you know, a lot of the stuff that happened on Saturday was confined to Saturday, but I didn't really feel like there was a great deal of other stuff to come out of the Sunday.
The good part was there was a great deal of action.
Yeah, yeah, but nothing.
And good, solid, hard action.
Not as much for you to do.
Without me getting involved, and I really liked it. I actually for once was watching the motor race, and we spoke about it on the last podcast, and we said, you know, what's it going to be like? I said it'll be a bull ring. You asked me a question. Is there going to be passing? I said, yes, there'll be passing.
You're right.
We had tire dig, we had people trying different strategies, and kind of just makes me think that's an old school track with consequences. And when I look at the Phillip Islands, the Queensland Raceways, Winton, it reminded me of Winton. There's always people having a crack up the inside, door rubbing, stuff going on. So it's only me speaking, but there's a lot to take away from going to a small bull ring, old school track that allows the boys to get the gloves off a bit.
And funnily enough, the three that you mentioned are not on the calendar at the moment. We've got to find a way to get those ones back on the calendar somewhere, because I think we're going to get similar sort of racing and those heritage events, those tracks that people have attended for many years, you know, in sort of country areas, northeast Victoria there with Winton and out Ipswich Way always was well attended over the course of time with the QR rounds. And Phillip Island's always struggled for a crowd, particularly in more modern times. But if they could get the date right and the weather right and the planets to align, that'd still be something pretty cool as well. Mate, great to catch up on Race Control. Loved stepping through all of the goings-on from Taupo. I think we got the pronunciation right more often than not. So we're going to give ourselves a big tick for this one. Thanks for tuning in with us, mate. And we'll chat to you after Perth with the Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint.
Cheers, Nunes.
There he is, Craig Baird, here on the Race Control podcast. Hope you've enjoyed these pods. We're going to take you deeper right throughout the course of 2024 into what's going on in Race Control. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. And we'll have more of those in future rounds. Thanks for tuning in again this week. We'll chat to you again next time with another edition of Race Control.